Mwirige Kula, the moderator for the for this panel. Mwirige, please take the stage.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine.
How are you? In Kenya, we also want another one. Our uni. We're asking ourselves a few questions about how do we lay the foundation for the next generation in Africa. And in this session, we have wonderful panelists being led by Savannah Konovoski. Welcome on stage. You sit just right next to me. Nandaya Enegesi, please welcome. Please clap for them as they come up next to her. We have Regina Onum from Soronko Solutions. I haven't seen Felicia Gwite.
Why not? I'm right here.
Ah, please clap for her. A bigger clap for her. And of course, you need to clap for the audience. Wonderful participants. Hi, is that how you clap for yourselves? You need to have to earn some firepower. Oh yes. And we start right off from immediately. And we'll just have a quick introduction from the panelists. Gwite, not guilty.
It's Gwite.
Ah. We'll have a brief from you and from everyone else about what you do, your experiences, in just brief snippets.
Of what I do?
Yeah.
Okay, I can do that. Well, I'm Felicia Gwite. I am the Worldwide Education Lead for Channel in Education, GM at Microsoft in public sector. I spend most of my day trying to figure out how to get technology solutions and devices into the hands of students. As we compete in this market. And sometimes I teach. I am a PhD, so I'm Dr. Gwite, so if you want to call me Dr. G, that's okay. I teach marketing to master's and PhD students. I sit on panels for dissertations. And I am on the board of the Boys and Girls Club in Seattle.
Ah, wonderful.
Hi, my name is Regina Honu. I'm the CEO of Soronko Solutions, and we run Soronko Academy, which is a coding and human-centered design school. So we teach coding and human-centered design to children, young adults, and the disabled.
Soronko, not Sonko.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nadia Inegesi. I'm with Andela, and at Andela, it's our mission to evenly distribute opportunity across the world by vertically integrating industry and academia in the field of software development. And at Andela, it is my personal calling to create the right processes, curriculum, and programs that are necessary for the brightest people in our communities to learn how to be a technology leader. And these days, I'm more focused about looking for the right channels to evenly distribute that opportunity to learn to be a technology leader across Africa.
Thank you. Konovsky.
My name is Savannah Konovsky, and I am the CTO of Moringa School. Moringa School is a software engineering accelerator, so we take people with either limited or some amount of experience and turn them into software engineers in a short amount of time and then help them get jobs.
Thank you. I guess we got only one gentleman from the panel, and therefore we start with him. We note from your experiences and dealing with the education and technology and thinking that we want to see how we can build a wonderful foundation for the next generation in Africa. From your experiences, what works and what's too ambitious?
What works and what is too ambitious when applying education to technology,
yeah,
or applying technology to education?
In a way.
Yeah, because to me, I see differences between edtech and tech ed. and their overlapping principles that you can apply to both. So for EdTech, I think a lot of people think that EdTech is really about software, but it is not. As a matter of fact, the problem of EdTech is really just solving the scaling problem of education. Textbooks were fine, right? And then sites like Wikipedia and video games started providing the opportunity for people to learn faster than what the educators could do. So everybody freaked out. And educators started uploading digital textbooks and appending curriculum to gamified interfaces. But really, it feels like we're almost missing the plot, right? The use of software can be excessive. So what we really need to get back to is first principles of learning. How are we creating opportunities and experiences where everyone can interact with material that lets them to observe the particular expertise they're trying to learn, imitate it, and innovate from there? So for me, the limitations are definitely around the overuse of technology and not focusing on the best principles.
Yeah, so we must focus on the learning environment, the pupils, the teachers, the school.
The interactions between all these pieces as well.
Oh, thank you very much. Please clap for him. Felicia.
Yes.
Holding a PhD, sitting on panels, teaching, and such wonderful experiences. We know that integration of ICT in education in Africa is picking up quite fast. What would be your recommendations?
Well, I think that given that I travel around the world and education moves at different velocities, I'll say that, my recommendation is to take things as they come. My observations in most countries is that adopting new technology is difficult. Teachers have to adjust, students have to adjust, our curriculum has to adjust. In Africa in particular, I think it's like 34% of your population uses mobile phones, which is 2%. Most of the other countries, but only 2% use them as much as you do. I think the recommendation is to try to migrate to different form factors. I mean, I think that's critical. And it's critical because it expands your world. The different form factors will have different bios and different types of capabilities at a cheaper cost or equivalent cost. So if I were here and this is what I would try to migrate to different form factors. And also in that migration, understand or educate others around me to take on technology in different forms as opposed to just a cell phone.
Wonderful. So then, would a solution perhaps in Australia or from the US or China work in any African setup?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite.
Would a solution exactly in Australia or in the US or anywhere
solutions?
Else? Yes.
Well, I can say this. We will announce some solutions, some education-specific solutions. But what we have today, and this is just being quite candid, is we have solutions like our office solution. We cater it to, we adjust it to meet the education needs. I think as schools start to adapt and require technology in the classroom, you'll see more applications. I work with a lot of partners who build custom applications on the cloud for math and science and those kinds of things. But I think what you'll see more in the coming year, absolutely for sure, is things more around building capabilities of understanding technology as opposed to understanding schoolwork, because you can always use e-books. That's easy to do. I think it'll be a more technology-driven curriculum that you'll see start prevail, given where we are in the industry.
Thank you. I think at this point we'll give the audience a chance. And the question to the audience, what are your dreams for the next generation in Africa? And what do you see as your role in it? Quick response.
I live in Uganda and I've lived there for a long time, and it's really the move from in education from knowledge-based learning to skills and understanding. and being equipped for the real life out there, as opposed to still sticking to this old education system that's kind of rote learning, churning out, and all that sort of stuff. Because you see, I see kids being destroyed by education. You know, they go into the education system, bright, young, eager, and they come out at the end of tertiary education, and you know, whatever they had has been taken away. You know, so that's the whole sort of paradigm that we need to shift that now. If we can, whatever help we can get from technology and so on, then that's.
Wonderful. So you are looking for, you hear from the audience, the general desire is to have a shift towards skills-based education as opposed to puffing up with knowledge. So at this point in time, I will ask our sister, Regina. It has been said we have a problem with creating locally relevant content in Africa. I think it's a complaint from many players around us. How do we get it done faster and suitable to the curriculum while meeting the dream of skills-based education?
Okay. So I think the first approach is to, you know, equip young people with the skills to be able to build this local, you know, source curriculum and content. Because if you put the power in the hands of the young people, they'll come up with all these amazing things. The other thing is also to engage with educators and, you know, governments and different stakeholders. So all different parties need to come together to look at, okay, what is it going for it? How can we revamp the old curricula? Because, you know, there's some sort of standardization. So, for example, in West Africa, you have WASI. So with that sort of WASI curriculum, how can we make it more interactive? How can we take it from just rote memorization to pass an exam? When somebody says osmosis is the flow of water from up to down, what does it mean in real life? You know, those kinds of things. So how can we break down everything that we're learning so that it's applicable? And I think if we have all these different stakeholders come together and engage with, you know, up-and-coming developers or up-and-coming people that are learning different skills, you know, we can really revamp the curriculum, yeah.
Regina pushes the question that it's all of us working together, all the stakeholders. And of course, I get it that giving the opportunity to the young generation to be part and parcel of creating the relevant for them, what is relevant for their learning. Back to the audience, what do you see as your role in creating this kind of environment?
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
My name is Edwin Mai. I'm a student, a computer science student at Moi University. And my suggestion would be that if these corporate organizations, specifically in IT, any other organizations or economies, if you invest in students, if you provide a platform to students, specifically in college and universities, I'm telling you, you'll have empowered a great group of people who can change the world. For example, when you look at our universities, I am a computer science student, yes, but you'll find that my university does not provide an infrastructure that can support me as an IT student. Now, what if Microsoft came to my university and invested into this program? They may end up making me a better person in the future. So investing in students becomes the only solution to integrate education with technology and coming up with better ideas. Just to mention, like in Kenya, we have great tech talent, but what we lack as IT students is we don't have someone to invest in us. We don't have someone to come and listen to us, but most of them will come, tell them your idea, run away with the idea, give you 100,000 Kenya shillings as a student, move around, you're happy. See? But at the end of the day, not gaining it. So investing in students, empowering them, cooperating with the universities in different ways, if it's a production industry, technology, just empowering students, make creative.
Thank you.
You know, I gotta say that concerns me. when you say that, because one of the things that, one of the core mission of Microsoft is to, we get up every day, and our goal is to help everyone on the planet achieve their best. I mean, it's what we do. And so we have a lot of programs. We've taught in Africa, 775,000 people have gone to academies, free training from Microsoft. We have the Imagine Cup, where we take great ideas and innovate, and we fly them to the States, and we do contests, and we have STEM programs. So if we're not showing up in places that are important to you, or that allow us to tap into those resources, the students, because we want to empower everyone to achieve their personal best, then you probably should catch up with me afterwards, because I'd really be interested in hearing where we're missing. We may not be in the places you are, and that's unfortunate.
So the voice of the students says, invest in us. Microsoft says, we are investing in you.
Yeah.
I think we need to clap for each other. And now it emerges that in this wide ecosystem of stakeholders, we have one Moringa School. I think we've worked with the Moringa School at the Jomo Kenyatta University. And we get to understand you have invested quite a lot in investing in the students. Could you share a little bit on your investment in the students alongside other stakeholders?
Yeah, absolutely. So at Moringa School, we think of the entire pipeline pipeline sounds like a really like business-oriented word. But what we're thinking about is the experience of the student, like all the way through our course. So that starts, you know, not when they walk in the door on day one, that starts well before. So how do we make sure that we are creating this experience before they walk in the door that is really driven by the demands that are in the modern workplace, that are in the market, and create an environment as well that is, you know, good to learn in. That means that we have to really listen to our students. We really have to understand what they need. We have to create an environment that is creative and that is exciting and that allows you to express yourself in the ways that you need to in order to grow. And if you don't have these, you know, people to interact with that allow you to do that, if you don't have hiring partners at the end of the program that are, you know, willing to take you in and say, so I see where you are and, you know, I understand your personal growth path and where I want you to be, then, and you instead go to a company where you're working kind of just as like a cog in the machine and you don't get that personal growth that is really necessary for larger systemic change, then there's not as much success, and it just isn't as nice. So with Moringa School, we were listening to hiring partners before and after. We're looking at the market, so that's technologies, that's also soft skills, and we're really listening to our students. Like, every single week, we ask our students for feedback. They can give us feedback anytime while they're going through the course. We, at every level of the organization, we make ourselves extremely open to anybody to come and talk to us. And we, you know, we're doing this both with our students, with our larger community, and then by looking at trends that are around the world as well.
Thank you. So do you work with the full ecosystem of the basic education, higher education? What is your focus?
So at Moringa School itself, we typically take people that are like 18 to 27 years old. That's not because, you know, we need to only take those people, but those are the people that are typically attracted to our course. And, you know, that's because we do this practical and skills-based learning, and we're really focused on outcomes, so helping you get a job and having a successful outcome, whatever that means to you. And before that, we also do trainings for secondary schools, and even before that, so we've done trainings where we've trained 6-year-old kids, which is always a huge joy for our instructors, all the way to, you know, people that are about to graduate and just want to explore computer science as an option.
Thank you. We are having a lot of discussions about review of curriculums in Africa. And I believe in many countries now there's a rethink of shifting from knowledge to skills. And issues like talent path are coming into the picture. Competence-based curriculum. Felicia, what is your take on this dimension
We've seen the shift from knowledge to skills transform, and we've seen the shift. It's probably started, I would guess, around 10 years ago when they started doing online courses. Phoenix, University of Phoenix started doing, you know, online full service degrees. I think now, and what's emerging in more, I would say, more advanced states, instead of saying developed markets, more advanced markets, is where they're, you see more online interaction certificates, I mean, where they're willing to do that more. I think we are moving from just knowledge to skills because you have to apply. Even some courses, some college courses, now I know in the States, they allow you to use your skills from work and apply to get a degree. I mean, so you may, if you're doing finance at work, you may opt out and not have to take finance classes. I think what my role is in this whole thing and what the role of technology is to keep, to understand the continuum of learning. And the continuum of learning, actually, you learn when you can apply. I mean, so when people say to me, oh, I got a degree, if you can't explain it to somebody who doesn't, then you really haven't acquired the skills that you need. So application of skills, we do that a lot at Microsoft. They teach us something, then they have us apply it. So that's a lot of what I see happening in curriculum, in from K through 12, even through higher ed, is acquire the skill, acquire the learning, and apply the skill. And you'll see more of that. We do that in our rotation program when we hire kids out of college. We have them, maybe they might work in product marketing for 3 months. They have to do a project, then they move to finance. They have to do a project. So that's how that transition is working. And don't forget the vocational, what I call lifelong learning potential. So those are the things that I'm seeing.
I'd just like to contribute to that, especially when you mentioned learning and applying. It's very critical when you think of curriculum design for skills. Because in anything that you learn, there are three modes of learning. It's your cognition, what you're thinking about, or what you're reading, for instance, or it's about your construction. What are you actually doing with what you're studying? And it's about the community. Who are you interacting with while doing it? For the most part, we've nailed down the cognition piece. Like, there's lots of education material. You can read and you can study all day. But what are you actually doing? How are you applying those skills? And who are you applying them with? Because in the formal economy, that's what happens. You have a group of people that you work with. You have to exhibit those skills. You have to collaborate with them. And I would like us to evolve our curriculum design to incorporate those elements of construction and community. And that's how we can definitely leapfrog what's going on right now.
And now that you brought this one out very well, Africa in 2000, the Economics magazine, the Dark Continent, 2010, Africa Rising. How do we keep the African dream more on the rise? And what will be the role of technology in this?
Perfect. So for the last 24 hours, we've attended different workshops in this conference. And the two biggest themes that have stood out to me are, who is going to build our local solutions on which platforms? And the second theme has been inclusion. How many people are going to participate in that effort? And these are the two problems that we must definitely solve if Africa must continue to be on the rise. One of our colleagues yesterday during the keynote said, the problem with Africa is we consume what we don't produce, and we produce what we don't consume. Right? And really, we need to start thinking about solving our problems using technology. And that's the only way we can move forward. Are we solving our own problems using technology? And are we making it inclusive so the rest of our continent can participate? And that's how we stay on the rise.
Now, back to the audience. It is emerging that we must tackle the element of shifting to competence-based education. We must also begin shifting towards producing what we consume. In this case, then, how do we begin producing what we consume? Any response from the panel, from the audience?
There's somebody over there.
I think I'll go back to the issue of more content. That's where we can work on. Content for our education system has to be. We need to include all stakeholders. I think the missing key people in content production are the real beneficiaries in the education system. The real beneficiaries, when you, I'm talking now with regard to our education system, that we are now using a digital platform to disseminate education through this laptop project. And if you look at the content, it's not user-friendly to the beneficiaries. I think I saw it is in PDF format. I mean, a kid will not find it to be user-friendly. So we need to be innovative when it comes to content production for the beneficiaries, involve them in producing those content. And I think that's a space innovators can take advantage of. Can we develop, can we be innovative when it comes to content? Look for things that will attract these young people to enjoy studying. From there, we build from the bottom up approach. That means the kids are able to appreciate the learning process and they grow with it. So it's just my contribution towards that.
Regina, how do we make kids begin enjoying the learning experience?
You know, I think it's all about connecting with them and speaking a language that they understand. So let me give you an example. We have a program called Tech Needs Girls, where we try and reach out to young girls to get them to create technology. If you come into the room and then you start, with technology, you can build a financial app, or with technology, you can do A, B, C, D, or with technology, you can do something in healthcare. They don't care, you know. It's not something that's relevant to them. They're not interested. But if I say, look at my outfit, look at my hairstyle, or look at my makeup, I can use technology to help me decide which dress I'm going to wear, what it will help me choose different color hairstyles. They sit up, and they're more interested in that. If we're talking about gamification, different types of games, like, you can use technology to do this type of game, they sit up. You know, so it's really about speaking to them in a language that's relevant to them today. So not speaking about the future, like, one day she's going to be a lawyer, so this is what she's going to use technology to do in the law. She doesn't know. She doesn't care. What is important to her today is, you know, how does she connect with her friends on Facebook? You know, how does she get the latest styles? And it's the same across with boys and girls. So you have to find a way to connect to them now, today, in a language that, you know, will make them see that, okay, this is how technology applies to my everyday life. Because for some people, technology seems to be something there, you know. But if you break it down and say, okay, this is what I can use it for, this is how it solves a very basic problem that I have today, then they can really start to connect the dots. And then with that type of content, they want to learn more. So then they can take it from that point and keep moving and keep increasing their knowledge. But if it's something really like far removed out there, not really connecting to them now, it's like, okay, one day. But you know, you really have to get them where they are now.
So Savannah, how do we manage to bring the kids to enjoy what they are learning today as you build the foundations for them to be in the future and to be seated where you are 20 years from now?
I absolutely love what you're saying. I think that this process of co-creation is so important in building things that are actually meant for the people that you're working with. So, you know, that extends to every part of technology. If you're building an app, it needs to be, you know, client, like, good for your customers. If you're building curriculum, it's the same thing. And there are a lot of these concepts that are used in the tech world of, you know, these like product development cycles. And in that, it is, you know, user experience and connecting and understanding. And that is something that traditionally it's just a list of checkboxes of things that you have to tick off and teach your students. But rather now we have, you know, these other tools, and we have people that are from all different backgrounds, and you know, in tech in particular, they come in and they have this box of tools, and then they apply it to the environment that they're working in. So So I think that, you know, sparking this interest early of starting to work with people of all shapes and sizes in a way that really makes sense for them, and then having opportunities for them to grasp that throughout their entire life as well, at different stages of their personal growth, of their professional growth.
So thank you very much for that. And Nandaya, how would we, in your concept of cognition, construction, and community, how do we make them realize or get engaged for the moment while building around the community in their spaces, in their learning environments? How do we create an awesome kid for the entire community, and how does technology come in?
Right. So for effective learning to happen, the learner has to be curious, and the learner has to have the opportunity to express their creativity. So especially in software, like I'm an engineer, and I know there are many engineers in the house today. The one thing that really stimulates us is how difficult a problem could be to solve. And until we solve that problem, we do not stop. Better still, while we're solving that problem, we want to be doing it with the people that we enjoy being around. So in order for you to create that environment, you need to think of designing the kind of work or the kind of challenges that will be mentally stimulating. And at the same time, you want to make sure that the people who are also engaging are predisposed to interacting with each other while solving those problems. Now, I am not yet aware of any technology solutions that are able to do that very well. But the edtech that is going to be the best edtech of the future is one that's going to be able to creatively stimulate people and reward them for their curiosity.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Felicia.
Yes.
It brings the idea that maybe there could be solutions out there, education technology solutions out there. And Microsoft has been at the forefront in creating a number of these solutions.
Right.
In parting shot, what do you see as the future of technology in education?
I think that there's a risk for technology just sort of taking over education. And not a risk, but a high propensity that will happen. We're a nation or country of instant gratification. And education's construct today is not instant gratification. And so I think we're going to see more uses in technology to get to the end game faster. But I want to say this, and I've been in technology 35 years. It's not the answer to everything. I feel that technology has empowered me, and it has empowered my children, and it has empowered members of my family. It is a tool to empower you to gain access to information, and that's what education is all about. But I do think that we'll see less face-to-face teaching. Artificial intelligence will come into play. It's a lot of work that will, a lot of things that will just evolve. Just like, I mean, I don't know, five years ago, no one was using the phone. You use phone for everything. 10 years ago, cell phones weren't really used as widely as they are now. So that's what you'll start to see. Augmented reality, all of that will have a big effect on how education will evolve. Because right now, we're using HoloLens to teach doctors how to do heart surgery. So we have some big things in store for us in the upcoming years. I guess 5 or 10 years, you'll see a lot of things shift dramatically.
Thank you. Regina, in 30 seconds, it emerges that we must appeal to the pupils at this moment, but we must also take care of instant gratification so that we don't just seek for it now and it is no longer. Mm-hmm. We must work into the future. What is your take?
Like she said, I mean, I see like the future, there'll be less, you know, sort of face-to-face interaction and more sort of like self-learning, you know, that's what I say. Now, since we, like in our schools, when we take away the fear of children asking questions, because, you know, the traditional model, you don't question the teacher. you get all sorts of questions. You know, every time I have a session, I have to have my phone and Google search on standby because they'll ask me a strange question. I have no idea what the answer is. So there'll be all these things that are coming out because kids are curious and they have different types of questions. And you know, like teachers or maybe educationists may not be able to provide all the answers, so they have to go and seek for more. And we hope that they do that. We hope that they are pushing and prodding and trying and failing and coming up with all sorts of things. And the mode of tinkering and being able to do that in a space where you feel safe. So now, like somebody said, if you take a course and you fail online, nobody knows, you know, so you can keep trying till you get better at it. And so I think the future looks more at kids or young adults going out there to try different things, where we eliminate the fear of failure, the fear of don't ask a question, having the teacher as the only source of knowledge. Like if the teacher is says 1 + 1 = 6, 1 + 1 = 6, you don't question. Removing that, where they can question, they can look at this is not the if this is the status quo, how do we go past that? And we'll see great innovations coming out where they are not following the line, they are stepping out and thinking outside the box.
Thank you, Rav. Nanda Nayan.
It's Nadir. So talking about the future, definitely lots of self-learning, and like that's the way we have always learned. That's the way we evolved, and over time we sort of missed the plot. So I think now that information is being evenly distributed across networks, and we all have access to these networks through our phones, through our computers, through our interaction with people that also have connections to these networks, people are going to have better access to information and are going to leverage that in educating themselves and educating their peers.
Thank you. Savannah, it looks like this panel, it is the opposite. Ladies are more than the gentlemen. But the general society, it's the other way around. Or perhaps in societies where we have advanced in inclusivity, we have lost on the other side of the gender. How do you deal with it in your parting shot?
Of having few women in technology?
Yeah.
A lot of it, so I'm also a software engineer, and I worked in Silicon Valley as a software engineer for a few years before. And during that time, you know, I had a lot of weird stuff happened to me, and still, it's not too infrequent that somebody will say something that's a bit off. And as a woman, it is difficult, and you know, as any minority, it is difficult to have somebody say something to you or have an experience. And it's important, and also extremely difficult to stand up in those moments and to educate yourself and to educate other people about how you are being impacted. Just, you know, that empathy building and those bridges that are not, you know, crossed in everybody's mind. And also to understand, like, where other people come from when you're communicating with them, because we all have different types of interactions with people of all different backgrounds, and it's important to notice how you are carrying yourselves in those moments, and to understand how your words come out. And on top of that, just having more people that look like the people that are not represented in these minority groups up on the stage. Like, I think it is great that we have a guy here. I think it's amazing. You need to have representatives from all different shapes and sizes again. But and we also have, you know, many different ages and skill experiences, life experiences. And having those different voices where you just see people that are, you know, again, at every stage of your own growth that you can relate to, and having them, you know, reach out to you, and having them more accessible to you than in the traditional past where you see authority or you see older people as somebody that you can't really access. But sharing those stories and knowing that you are, you know, you're learning tools. You are entering a technology system, you're entering a tech world where there are tools available to you to do what you want to do with them, and keeping that focus and staying empowered yourself.
Thank you. It emerges that we are looking forward to a wonderful society where competencies far outdo what we have up in our knowledge, and we are also learning that we have a role to play together to make it work, and technology will be part and parcel of this wonderful future. Of course, engaging our pupils for the now, but also ensuring that we are able to build far into the future. I think it's wonderful. And we also are seeing that even in the midst of challenges in our environments, we still can produce winners. And so, as I understand, see, having started from the Silicon Valley, a minority in a state, I mean in an environment, but still she's sitting here today as a winner. So I think we need to clap for each other because we can create a society of winners. And with that, I am Wiriki Kiula, the ICT Director of Jomo Kenyatta University of Agriculture and Technology, and I'm glad to have had this session. And wonderful evening to all of us, and a final clap as we invite Ari to take over. Thank you.
Thank you, Kiula. Thank you very much for the panel. Another round of applause to your panelists. Thank you very much.